And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-host with me today will be David Hulley and Mike O'Connor. This episode, we'll be looking back at the 2-2 draw for Fulham against Cardiff City at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show first. Mr. O'Connor, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Russ. Thanks for having me again on the show. I know it's been a while. My apologies for any issues that have arisen in the previous shows that I've attempted to join you with, but I'm happy to be back here and really excited to talk about this very interesting outcome, this 2-2 draw for Fulham that happened yesterday against Cardiff City.
Absolutely. We'll be talking about that shortly. Let me bring on David. Mr. Hulley, how you doing?
Good evening. Good evening and good afternoon. It's a Goldman already. I'm pleased to say there's life in the old dog yet. These youngsters haven't quite seen us oldies off from Cottage Talk yet, have they, Russ?
They haven't, David. Listen, you were at Craven Cottage, so you're going to be on to paint the picture. Yanis Shanaeus was supposed to join us. Hopefully Yanis maybe can join us late if he can get in. So hopefully Yanis will be joining us at some point. But let's get on with the show. And we have to discuss the elephant in the room, David. We have to start there. We have to talk about Slavisa's comments after the match. We're actually going to be doing a full show about this. We're hoping to do it tomorrow. But I wanted to just to get your thoughts and Mike's thoughts about Slavisa's comments. So I'm going to read the article from BBC Sport. These are quotes from the BBC Radio London interview that he did after the match. So I'm going to read it and get your thoughts, and we'll just start by talking about that. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I think we definitely have to address this. So let's start by talking about his comments. Again, this is on BBC Sports. So you can read that. It says, Fulham boss Slavisa Jokanović has criticized the club's transfer policy, declaring he is not an important person in their recruitment process. The Serb told BBC London that Craig Klein, a data analyst at the West London club, is ultimately responsible for signings. Here are the quotes from Slavisa. It generally depends on this guy, and these are in apostrophes, who's going to sign for us, not as in Klein. Jokanović said, the last decision is in the hands of this man. It's not my business. Klein was brought to the Whites by Tony Khan, the son of club's American owner Shad, and introduced statistical data to the club's recruitment. Chief Football Officer Mike Rigg also has an input in transfer deadlines at the Championship Club. Here's another quote from Slavisa. I'm a little bit disappointed because no one knows who this guy, again, in apostrophes, is. Jokanović added, that's Klein. Insists he's sitting in the director's box. I want to take responsibility for how I work with my team and how they perform, but I'm not part of the recruitment process. It is in the hands of people who believe they're more prepared. Then it goes on with a couple more quotes. It is better to ask questions for this man as he can explain what we are going to do in recruitment, Jokanović said. I've lost many players in the process in 9 months. In the last 2 days, I lost a few players who he believes are not good enough. I've had an opinion from one of the best managers in the world on one of the players, and he believes it is a good signing for us, and I believe that too. Craig doesn't believe it. It is a good signing for us, and this guy is not with us. All right, David, I'm going to start with you. I actually sent you the link so you could see this, and I've actually listened to the audio version of this. It's pretty scathing. What are your thoughts about Slavisa's comments about the transfer policy with Fulham? Excuse me.
Now, well, let me say hi, Mike. Sorry I didn't say hi before. Good to have you back. It's been a long time since we chatted on the show. But with this is our worst fears and worse, I think. This is the lunatics taking over the asylum. It really is. We had all this come up last season about, you know, this was the primary sort of source of recruiting players. And we said at the time, you know, I said this was very worrying. It was kind of said that if there was a balance between using the stats and using coaching, then maybe that's acceptable. But this appears to be pretty horrific. I mean, you know, I don't know how much they're paying this guy. I mean, they might as well got Calvin Klein in as Craig Klein, you know, or whatever. For good it were done. I could have got my 14-year-old son to do this because he could look at FIFA and the player rankings on FIFA, the game, and he can tell you every player in Europe and the world and how good they are and what they're good at, because this is just madness. It's absolute madness. You know, you can't do one thing without the other. You have to embrace modern technology, of course, but to you know, to disregard the views of other coaches and things as well. I mean, this is madness. You know, I think Slavisa must be very pissed off with this, to put it bluntly. I apologise for the word, but, you know, I think he would be, and I would be as well. This is very, very undermining. I know his job is not the manager officially. Nevertheless, you know, he's part of the process to source new players, and new players have been turned down because some guy who, you know, maybe knows nothing about the practicalities of running a football team is saying, no, this guy doesn't fit the stats. I'd be very interested to see, you know, who these players are that we've missed out on, which and how the players are rated that we currently have. I mean, you know, if the stats have said that Jazz Richards is rubbish and we should get rid of him, then the stats work. But, you know, there's lies, damn lies and statistics, remember. You can get statistics to show you anything you want to show, really, just how you interpret them or how you use them. And I think Solis is very unhappy. And the thing that surprises me that he spoke out about this as well. This is almost, you know, it frightens me. It's the last act of a desperate man saying something needs to change or I'm on my way, mate. Because, you know, this is a big embarrassment for the club to have him say that. So, you know, in other situations, you could imagine a manager being sacked for being as outspoken as that, really, about the club and the club's policy. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here. You know, is Slavisa going to walk? Is he going to be sacked? Or is something going to change for the better?
David, it definitely is a worrying situation. That's why I wanted to bring it to the table. Like I said, I'm going to be doing a full show on this hopefully tomorrow night, and then I'll really get into my thoughts on it. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, and I'll just share that I'm concerned, and you've raised my concerns. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this. I also want to mention that I was reading from an article, and the quotes at the very end mentioned Craig by name. The other quotes I was just adding in from the article because they were in parentheses, but he was obviously talking about Craig Klein. Mike, where do you stand on this? What are your thoughts on this? Because I'll just share my thoughts real quick. I'm not against having analytics being part of the decision-making process. My concerns are what our manager thinks about this, our head coach, I should say, and what kind of role the stats are having. Are they the deciding factor? That's what concerns me about this situation. What are your thoughts on all of this?
So my thoughts here are analytics are extremely important because without analyzing statistics and looking at games and passing rates and all this about players, you get a better understanding of who they are and if it's worth the money to scout them and what you're looking for to help implement your team. So this fella Klein, whoever he is, who's been put as this analytics director over Fulham's transfers, the only business he should ever have, period, dot, in our transfers, is if Slavisa says, I'm looking at these five players, I want more background information than what I currently know. This guy goes in and says, okay, here are your five players. Here are the statistics that I've found. Here's the information that you requested. Do with this what you will. Use this to help influence your judgment. In no way, shape, or form should this Craig Klein have the overriding say based on numbers alone and a complete lack of understanding of the game of football, have the ability to veto or override the manager or anyone that's directly associated with the results on the pitch. His only job should be to help, aid, and give and augment with additional data reasons that why we should or should not bid or pursue certain players to add to the squad. The fact that Slavisa has come out and said that he is not an important deciding factor, an important person in deciding who comes to Fulham, it's shambolic, it's an embarrassment, and it's undermining the very idea of what a manager is and what a manager does. So, I'm very outspoken about this, and I think Slavisa is actually speaking from a position of power, because seeing the start that we've had, how much the fans adore him, how well we've started this season in comparison to the previous four or five, if they try and sack him, they're going to lose the entire fan base. And if they try and hinder him in any way from being outspoken again, he's going to walk. It's a win-win for him, because if they're going to sack him,
then it's just he's going to walk into a better job. He's going to walk into somewhere else and get a job immediately. So I think it's a wake-up call for the Fulham hierarchy to realize that what they're doing is wrong. It's not working. They need to support Slavica and his decisions. And if they're going to somehow retain this Klein fella, they need to make sure that his role is an advisory capacity, only to provide additional data, not to help make decisions. It's not his position. It's not his lane. It's not his area. And he needs to be removed from any sort of decision-making process of whether or not players come to Fulham. That's basically where I stand in a nutshell.
Mike, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think you really nailed it. And before I go back to David, because I want David's comments, I'm going to move on from this. Like I mentioned, we're going to be doing a full show about this, and I'll share my thoughts more, and I'll have on a few more co-hosts. We'll be talking about it in more detail. But I think you really just nailed it for me. If this is an advisory situation, fine. You know, here are the stats. Here's what I'm seeing. Here are my recommendations. But if it's anything beyond that, if it's the overriding factor about deciding which players come to Fulham and overriding the manager, I have major issues with that, and Fulham have a problem on their hands. And like you said, this is a situation that the hierarchy of Fulham need to deal with ASAP, I mean now, before it blows up in their face. That's how serious I think that this situation is. David, I'll give you the final word on this.
No, I think Mike put it excellently. He said it pretty much, you know, without maybe the passion that I have, which is, you know, worrying. Mike put it very, very calmly in the fact that, you know, how there is a place for stats and analytics in the modern game, in sport in general and in everything, really. But it should be used only as one part of the process for recruiting and for that matter, for retaining players, I think, really, because you have to look at what you've got as well, not just what's coming in. And I think you put it excellently. But you know, the way the picture has been painted by Slavica is like it's very scary, I think. And
it is.
You know, he does at least have the strength, as you say, the position of strength that we've had a good start. And you know, they would really be shooting themselves in the foot. Well, not just the foot. I think they'd be shooting themselves everywhere if they lost him because of this, one way or another. And I think something needs to be done. And you know, this guy Klein, he's not winning any friends. Whether or not, you know, he's excellent at what he does, whether or not his model works brilliantly, who knows? But he's not winning himself any friends. And this is kind of, you know, everything that's bad about the ownership of Khan. Unfortunately, the complaints that we get, you know, how he's apparently too distant from the club, too remote, doesn't have an understanding of Fulham or of English football. And this is why we see so much complaints and moaning on Twitter and social media about it, because just this just highlights it. A guy who's a friend of the son of the owner who apparently is calling the shots. Very dangerous precedent, that's all I would say.
Yeah, David, listen, I hear you, and both of you have really spoken well on the subject, and I look forward to going into more detail tomorrow night on that. But it's worrying. It's definitely worrying. That's why I thought it was worth us talking about it in the beginning, and then we can move on and talk about the match, because I'm sure we all have seen messages from Fulham supporters, and I've been contacted by several that are concerned about this. So I thought we needed to touch on it. And, David, you bring up a good point. Maybe Craig has done a good job in a way of finding players, but ultimately, if he's having say on overriding players that Slavica wants, I've got a major issue with that. You know, again, we don't know what data has uncovered some of the players that have been brought in now. Maybe it's a factor, but ultimately, it shouldn't be the only factor why you bring in a player. It shouldn't just be about stats. It should just be an advisory role, like Mike said. If it's one piece of a puzzle, I have no problem with it. If it's the biggest deciding factor, I have major issues with that, and you could have problems with your head coach right now because of it, and that's what concerns me. All right, like I mentioned, we'll be doing a full show about this on Cottage Talk very soon, but let's now talk about the match. Let's put that aside. And David, you were at Craven Cottage, so I just want to get your opening thoughts on what you watched yesterday.
Well, overall, obviously, you've got to be pleased that we got something out of the match, because it looked like at one point it had all gone bad, and you've got to give the players credit for that. But I suppose, you know, from where we've been and where we started and the fact that we had our noses in front, you've got to say it's a bit disappointing, really. But, you know, it was almost a point gained at the end, whereas really it was 2 points dropped overall because, you know, we had total dominance first half without doing anything. And it was a bit of a languid performance, I have to say. First half was quite muted. Total domination, but without really any penetration. Too slow again. Not quite enough movements, not enough runs. But, you know, Cardiff didn't get near the goal. So, you know, first half, it was job done. Despite the lack of, I suppose, energy about the performance, really, we got our noses in front and we didn't let them have a shot at goal. So first half was great. Second half, Cardiff came up with more purpose, put us under more pressure. I think, you know, we struggled a little bit with the loss of IET. Not sure if the substitutions worked. Not sure if Corley starting worked, really. We looked, you know, much as it was a little bit predictable, we looked more dangerous once Matt Smith had come on at the end for the last sort of quarter of the match. But as I say, it was good character towards the end. I think last season, from that situation, we probably wouldn't have pulled it back. Conceded, you know, two goals, which, you know, were both well taken. First one was very avoidable, though. Second one, a little bit as well. Bit too easy to run at us and shoot. First one was a poor clearance by Kearney. Headed the ball straight to the guy, had a shot, hit it well. But you don't let people shoot from there. Second goal, again, the guy had a clear run at us, and he wasn't checked soon enough. And, you know, the sort of overall thing I got for the match was that for all the good work they did, Parker and McDonald, both similar kind of players there. And not neither of them is a midfield enforcer. Neither of them has tremendous pace. And I just still wonder if that's a position that we need to look at because there wasn't quite enough protection for the defence, especially on the second goal. But otherwise, you know, it was a solid performance, really. Solid but unexciting, to be honest with you. But, you know, as I say, got our noses back into it at the end, which was a positive.
No, very good there, David. Listen, I want to go back and ask you about this because you were talking about the Aite situation. I was talking to Emilio Danilo, and I asked him the question, did that really cause issues for us when he came off injured? I know he brought on Ryan Session, but talk a little bit more about that because listening to it, it sounded like it was a factor.
Well, I got a few people on Twitter yesterday with it because I said, what a marvelous tactical solution, substitution that was, taking off IET and bringing on Session on for him to score. And a few people bit, even our friend Ben, unfortunately. Ben, if you're listening, sorry, mate, couldn't resist. But now obviously IET was injured. It was a bit worrying because I think actually out of the newer players, he's the one that excites me the most. He's you know, when he gets in a run, he's got pace and he's got skill to dribble with it, and you know, he causes, you know, a lot of problems, and he just kind of started to get into the game, I think, a little bit yesterday, and that's when we lost him. And it was a big shock, really, they brought on Session. I can understand why, kind of left-sided player, but didn't expect to see him in that position. Would have expected kind of the old standard one to bring on, you know, Lasse Vigga Christensen, put him on the left, perhaps. Or even, I was thinking maybe could have brought on Matt Smith at that point and moved Aluka out wide, and because for the last period of the game when Aluka was playing wide in that position, I think he looked quite dangerous there, and I think we were probably more balanced. With Session there, I'm not so sure it worked, really. I think at times he was a little bit lost playing in that kind of new role there. Yes, he got a goal, but otherwise we weren't very fluid from there, and it was kind of down that side where they got the second goal from. So it was an interesting thing. Obviously, I think it demonstrates the fact that, you know, we have a lack of strength in depth at the moment. And
right.
It was difficult. There was no clear out-and-out option what to do when Aite got injured, unfortunately. We don't have a clear replacement on the bench. LBC is not a left midfielder or a winger. Session isn't really a winger. And otherwise, it meant, you know, a tactical change around. So it was a key moment there. Obviously,
yeah.
It seemed to work out for the best with, you know, the goal after a couple of minutes. But I think that was part of, you know, Cardiff's resurgence, that we lost the threat of Aite there, and they built on that second half.
Right. That's why I wanted to bring it up to you, David, because, again, I'm just listening to it, but it seemed like the partnership of Ayite, Aluko, and Kearney really works fantastically together. But if you take one cog out of it, it can affect you. That's why I wanted to ask you that question, because that is kind of what Emilio shared with me. So I'm glad that you brought that up as well. All right. Over to you, Mike. I just want to get your thoughts. Unfortunately, you and I have not had a chance to watch the replay. The replay is not available yet. Just sent you highlights. But let's just talk about this as a result. What are your thoughts about the result?
Again, listening to it just via the radio, you can only imagine so much and see so much on the pitch as Gentleman Jim or Jamie are speaking. But overall, at the end of the 90 minutes, it probably, if you're not looking at statistics, as ironic based off everything we've talked about, speaks, it's a pretty fair result based off of the goals that Cardiff scored, two very well-taken goals. But, you know, I'm one of those people that really definitely thinks this is another 2 points dropped, much like up at Leeds. It's another case of us getting ahead, getting the one goal ahead, and then not scoring the vital second to kind of see off the game, or at least give you that extra goal buffer should the opposition score one on you, because you always know that's a possibility no matter who you're playing. It just takes a set piece or a mess up in the defense or a well-placed ball or a worldie of a strike to make it 1-1. So anytime we go up 1-0, I never feel comfortable. And it's when they scored the first goal and then they scored the second, I honestly thought that the match was over. I mean, this team has given me so much more optimism and hope that I actually don't ever really feel that we're going to lose. But after going 1-0 up and then in a span of 20 minutes going down 2-1, it kind of, I guess, evens itself out with the Leeds game, and where we dropped 2 points there, well, hey, instead of losing the game, we actually came back to draw it. So it kind of evened itself out points-wise. However, I mean, overall, it's a fair result. I'll take 1 point greater than no points, of course. But at the end of the day, at home against the Cardiff City side, which has been struggling, and with the team that we have and the belief that this team seems to have and the manager we have, I'm still disappointed that we only ended up getting a 2-2 draw. But overall, can't complain too much. And, it's just on to the next one at this point. We still remain unbeaten. So on the whole, I'm happy.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, David, over to you. I'm going to have you just describe what you saw. You've already been talking pretty much about the first half, so I just want to get your thoughts just a little bit more about what you saw in the first half, and then also talking about the goal by Ryan Session, and that'll just be your first half observations.
Okay, as regards the starting lineup, I just thought I'd comment that quickly. It wasn't a big surprise, I think. The team literally picked itself. The only questions were, would we see Malone back at left back, or would Session stay there? I think Malone missed out midweek because he's unwell, I believe. Up front, would it be Corley or would it be Matt Smith? And in the centre of midfield, you know, would it be Parker again because he's played a few on the trot? But the team was, you know, not unexpected whatsoever. So first half, it was a very languid affair. Really. Not much happened, but obviously came to life just before half time. Good run with the ball by Aluku, who sort of, you know, fooled his man in the area. Looked like he was going to cut in for a shot, and then went to the byline, pulled it back, and Session, who'd been on the pitch 2 minutes literally, mishit it rather with his right foot, but did enough for it to go in. It was in a good position nevertheless. Obviously delighted for a guy, you know, 16 years old. Just, you know, he hasn't even finished school, really. He's just waiting to get his exam results, and he's got his first goal for the team. So, you know, it did look like a fantastic kind of, you know, substitution, albeit, you know, forced upon us by the injury. He's come on and got his goal with literally his first touch, I think. So, again, great time to score a goal, of course, a couple of minutes before half-time. All the people who snuck off for their early drinks or whatever they do, missed it again like they did against Newcastle as well. I think we're going to have feature that more often in Cottage Talk, I think, because it really drives me mad, people who leave early for half time to go and have a drink. If you want to leave early, don't come to the bloody match at all, you know. Watch the match to its entirety. There are people leaving the match with 5 minutes to go yesterday at 2-2 or whatever, as soon as we scored the goal. You know, anything could have happened in the last 5 minutes, literally. and that people leave the match. They want to get home early. They want to beat the traffic. What's the point of going to the match? So anyway,
good point,
they missed Session Yon's first goal for the team. One of our youngest ever goal scorers, if not the youngest,
yeah.
I believe. So perfectly set up at half time anyway. But as I said, the tone of the match changed the second half. Cardiff obviously, worked out things and, how we were different and what we were doing and what we weren't doing, and started to provide more of a threat. But, we talked about the stats and everything. When you look at the stats, it's 2 points dropped, definitely 2 points dropped. Although, we're glad with the point in the end, we were. But it's 2 points dropped because, we had far more shots than they did. We had more possession than they did. We controlled the game much more than they did. But, when it comes down to the shots on target, we had four shots, I think, from 15. They had three shots on target from eight. They were much more efficient with their shots. David Button hardly had anything to do. Bar, obviously, he had one fairly comfortable save that was on target. Apart from that, obviously, we had the free kicker hit the bar second half, which was a great free kick. Looked like it was going to go in for a minute. And the two goals, which I don't think you can put any fault on him at all for, really. So, Cardiff, when they did attack, they used the ball a lot better, more efficiently. They were quite happy, really, to sort of sit back and let us muck around with it. It was only when we started playing with pace and started running at them a little bit in the second half, and also, of course, when Matt Smith was brought on and we started chucking in higher balls, that suddenly, the game changed, and they actually had to bring on a central defender towards the end, or an extra central defender towards the end, to try and nullify Matt Smith, because they could see how dangerous the threat was from him.
Okay, very good, David. Boy, you pretty much were describing both halves, which is great. I will ask you about the equalizer by Kevin McDonald in a little bit, but before we do that, I want to go back. I have some stats for you. We're talking about the stats, guys, so we might as well talk about the stats. These are halftime stats, so I want to get your thoughts before I go to Mike, get his thoughts on the halftime stats. If this kind of backs up what you watched, or if it's not a good, a good gauge of what you watched, here are the halftime stats, okay? Possession, Fulham had 66-34% for Cardiff. Total shots, Fulham had 6. Cardiff City had none on target. Fulham had 1 on target. Corners were even at 1. Crosses, Fulham had 10-8 with Cardiff City. Tackles, Fulham had 3. Cardiff City had 5. Attempted passes, 356-179 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 145-63 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 92% for Fulham, 84% for Cardiff City. Accurate passes, 327-152 in favor of Fulham. And aerial duels, Fulham won that in the first half, 6-1. So let me ask you, do the halftime stats back up what you watched?
They do, certainly. I mean, as I said, Cardiff didn't have a shot on goal. The only thing they did get was a corner, and that was in the first couple of minutes because we started playing against the stiff breeze, and they got a throw on, and their Icelandic super thrower put in a long throw that Parker got his head to, but I think with the way the ball was moving in the air, he can only put it behind for a corner, so that gave them a solitary corner. Apart from that, they didn't really get up near our goal, but this is where stats can be misleading as well. So much of the play was in the Fulham half, between the Fulham players, passing it from side to side. There wasn't enough penetration. It would go, from full-back to full-back, back across between... There was so much interplay between Maddle and Callas and Parker and McDonald. And if you were to... I don't know if you can get those individual stats about how much they passed. But that was where the ball spent nearly all the time, between the back four and the two central midfielders, really. And it was just side to side and side to side and going forward a little bit and then coming back again. So Cardiff were happy to soak it up. But the times we did get the shots, perhaps we needed to be more devastating with them. I mean, Alugu had a reasonable run and shot. Corley, maybe from a good position, could have done a little bit better. It was tight, but, we're the ones that had the shots. I think, we needed to make them count. That's why, we certainly need a striker, I think. We need an out-and-out striker from somewhere. Alugu is going to cause problems with his runs, but I don't see him being a big goal scorer. Matt Smith,
okay.
He's going to score goals, but he's not, he's not an out-and-out goal scorer, and he's not a 90-minute man. Corley,
sure.
Likewise, he'll get the odd goal, but he's not a big goal scorer. And so that's the missing piece in the jigsaw yesterday, someone who can put the ball in the net. But also yesterday, a little bit more movement, a bit more pace needed, more crosses, more accuracy.
Okay, very good there, David. Guess what, David? I have a little surprise for you. You ready for your surprise?
Go on.
Giannis, are you with us? Giannis.
I'm an idiot. I honestly am the Harry Redknapp of contributors here. I completely overslept the clock. So my apologies, David. My apologies, Ross. I've gone and I've pulled a Goldman again.
Well, I just want you to know David's on the line with us. Michael Connor's on the line with us as well, Giannis.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Well, listen, Giannis, before I go to Mike, we were just talking about the halftime stats, and we all listened to it. David was there, so David's going to be our eyes for this show. Just quickly, what are your thoughts about the result?
It's been a crazy 24 hours, really. I mean, we're a goal up half time. Sessegnon scores. We go 2-1 down. We get the point. You know, eight points from four games is a good start of the season. And then you hear Slavisa's overtures to the media. Although I think what he did was absolutely brilliant, because I think I think that was a PR move to apply some pressure to the powers that be to the keister. And I think the message, I'm sure, will be heard loud and clear. I'm sure enough Fulham fans will have voiced their displeasure at Messrs. Rigg and Khan about the lack of speed. But the result, you know, I thought we might get the 3 points at home, but, you know, we're still unbeaten. So it's a good start of the season. And once this transfer mess can be sorted out, and we've got, 10 days left?
Yep.
10 days left of the transfer window, then we can start to settle down. But it's been an interesting 24 hours for sure.
It definitely has. We actually started the show talking about Slavisa's comments, and Giannis, I'm actually going to be doing a show tomorrow night all about that. So this could be one full show talking about Slavisa and his comments to BBC Radio London, and we're going to go into some detail about that. But thank you again for joining us, and I will now want to go to Mr. O'Connor. And, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on what David shared about the first half and also the first half stats.
Yeah, so of course I can't be the eyes, you know, at the cottage watching the game. So the statistics to me, being, you know, across the pond looking at them, they scream out that we dominated Cardiff City, especially the no shots on target or on goal for them in the first half. I mean, that just shows from a purely statistical analysis that that we dominated them completely at home, which we very rightly should have based off of the starts of both teams. But what it also cries out for, in my opinion, is and David mentioned it, is the lack of that out-and-out striker. I mean, no offense to Colley. I love the lad. He puts a lot of good heart in and effort, but he is simply not good enough to be starting right now in this league and where we want to go. He's a great impact sub. He's a great replacement in the 60th minute or later on when you want to change up the dynamic of what you're going for. But Matt Smith should definitely – he did nothing to be dropped, for one. And second of all, although he lacks the pace and maybe the flair or some of the technical ability with his feet – his sheer presence of his size and his height and his ability to maybe basically draw two defenders on him in order to stop giving him free headers opens up the defense for people like a Luko and people like a Ayute to run in the back. So and to open up lanes for them by kind of attracting those other defenders. So the first half, just all it does to me is scream that we really need we have no problem controlling a game. We have no problem having accurate passes and opening up the midfield and the defense. We just need that player that, when given the chance, doesn't need eight of them to put the ball in the back of the net. He just needs one or two. And whether it's Scrappy or it's a worldie, he still puts them in the back. So the fact that, the substitution was great with Ayute going down with Sessegnon, but I don't think that starting the second half, and I know we'll get to that, it was the proper decision to keep Ryan in that out of position on the wing. It was a great impact positional move, and maybe at halftime he should have moved Ryan back to his traditional left back position, being 16 smaller physically against a very big Cardiff side. So the first half basically screams
that we're dominant, but we need to take those periods of dominance and really stamp our foot on the game and go one or two goals up by getting in that elusive front man that we're looking for at this time.
Okay, very good. And I don't want to speak for everyone, but I agree with all you guys that I think we definitely need a striker. I think this match screams out for it. We can also say the last match as well. We definitely need a proven goal scorer. And I think this match really just rams at home. Anyways, David, over to you. I want to get your second half observations. It's funny because Mike talked about Ryan Sessegnon playing in the midfield. I believe, I want to say halfway or maybe a little bit further along, he actually did go back and left back when LVC came on. So there was an adjustment there, but an interesting point by Mike talking about that early on in the second half because he was still in the midfield then. So I want to get your thoughts about their two goals. Like you said, these were great goals by Cardiff City. Fulham actually got the equalizer in the 76th minute by Kevin McDonald, the very good goal by Kevin McDonald. And you also mentioned this, too. I want to talk about the impact that you said Matt Smith had coming on in the 61st minute. So just share with us your second-half observations.
Well, Corley had a pretty quiet match. I mean, he had a few little runs, and he had that one shot where maybe he could have done better. And his movement was quite good, but he didn't really do much. He wasn't causing a threat to him as a striker. And so, obviously, bringing Matt Smith on, and he came on immediately after Cardiff scored. Now, I don't know if that was a planned substitution or if the goal made that decision, but that certainly was the big changer because, of course, it gives the options. They were putting the ball to Smith, and he did some great flick downs. You know, one particularly near the end for Kearney, who shot straight at the keeper, and he was causing them all sorts of problems. But it was certainly on the left. I'm not really sure. It was a bit disjointed. Obviously, I think Malone and Sessegnon had never played there together. Sessegnon hadn't played that role before. So, for me, it didn't work very well on that side. And it was logical when he did make that change. As I said,
right.
It was a surprising move to bring Sessegnon on. I know he scored, but I think, you know, and I hope Mike Gregg isn't listening before he shoot me. I did say to Mike afterwards, I thought Sessegnon was a bit out of his depth, to be honest with you. Yes, he did get a goal. And we can't take that away from him. And he's a young lad. But, you know, I think he's got a lot of learning to do still. And maybe it wasn't, you know, despite the goal, wasn't the right move for him at that point. Perhaps he should have gone with a safer bet of LVC. Or, as I said before, perhaps bring on, move Aluku to the left and bring Matt Smith on at that point to give Corley a foil to work with. Maybe Corley could then start benefiting from some flick-ons and stuff, you know, having two bigger guys up there. So it didn't really work. The tactics didn't really work for me very well yesterday. As I say, the first half we didn't really create enough, didn't, you know, use our dominance. Second half, our backs are against the wall because we then started having to chase the game. It was only then when you started to see better qualities that you started to see a bit more pace from Fulham, you know, a bit more adventure when we had to go after the goals. You know, it's a very dangerous situation to be 1-0 up. Twice in a week now we've been ahead and we've let a lead slip. You know, we've dropped points from a winning position, and let's not get back into that mentality from last year, because that was obviously a very unhealthy situation. We're still in a very good position to build on, but we certainly need more players. So first goal for Cardiff, it was a cross that was poorly cleared by Kearney, to be honest with you. He stuck his head there, it just rolled to someone outside the air, and he hit it first time, top corner, great strike. Second one, the guy's cut in between Sessegnon and Malone, and I think to be honest with you, you know, centre midfield weren't there to stop him. You needed someone there to stop him, and neither McDonald nor Parker were there to stop him. And he's got to the edge of the area, and he's curled a lovely shot in past Button. I haven't seen a replay, but I don't think, as I say, there's any fault to Button whatsoever. And then we're really chasing the game, but it was really all Fulham after this at this point with Matt Smith on, and there were several near misses. Lastly, I think it's Christensen. Excellent chance to score. Got himself in a brilliant position in the box. Only the keeper to beat, literally, from close range. And suddenly a leg was thrust out as he hit the ball from somewhere. Cardiff guy threw himself in front of the ball and blocked it. Then we had the flick down from Matt Smith to Kearney near the penalty spot. He hit it fairly weakly straight at the goalkeeper under a little bit of pressure. And finally, the goal. Thought we'd overplayed it at first. was looking for a cross to come in, and Aluka actually has done a bit of drinking and he's pulled it back to McDonald, who's just outside the air, taking one touch, rifled it straight in at the near post, straight as an arrow, straight in there. Also, there's another one I have to mention by Aluku, probably the best cross of the match, actually, on his left foot from the left wing, putting a brilliant cross to Matt Smith at the far post, headed it down, and Marshall was there to smother it. But, you know, definitely was better when we were chasing the game. We looked a more attacking team, and I think if we'd have had more time, we would have gone on to win the game.
Okay, very good there, David. Very interesting analysis of the second half. Let me go right back to you, because this is something that I'm curious your thoughts on. Cardiff City looked like a completely different team. Based on what I listened to, you obviously were there, so I shouldn't say that. Were they a completely different team? Because you're the eyes here. Were they different coming out in the second half? Based on what I listened to, it sounded like that. But should we give them some serious credit here? Because they went after it in the second half. You know, obviously the head coach, Trollope, really changed his tactics from the first half to the second half, it seems. So talk a little bit about Cardiff, because I don't think enough is being said of how they play.
Well, first half, really, they offered very little, and what they did offer, we mopped it up. You know, Maddle and Callas are both strong in the air and on the ground. There was no real penetration from them. Second half, I don't know how they changed it, but it did seem that some of their play was more down the flanks, I think, really. They started to get into wider positions. We didn't see, on the right, we didn't see much cohesion for Fulham either. Odoi didn't get forward, really, at all. And Kearney was, of course, drifting inside. And so, likewise, on the left, Sessegnon was kind of in a no-man's land position. He wasn't playing as an out-and-out wide man. He wasn't playing. It always reminded me a bit of that terrible situation when we had Sean Kavanagh playing left of a midfield three. It was kind of almost playing in that kind of position. It was neither a wide man nor a central player. It was sort of in and out of the game. And Malone was being pegged back more. I think Malone, he's someone who's effectively solid as a defender, but he needs to improve on his final ball a bit more. Maybe his passing and also his crossing. But we also saw lapses from people like McDonald as well, giving the ball away in position. The only one really didn't give the ball away that I can remember was Parker. So there's a few little mistakes, and Cardiff were quick to jump on these. And where they've been happy to sit back and soak up the pressure first half, second half, they were punishing us more for lapses.
Okay, very good there, David. I'm just curious your thoughts on how they played. Emilio thought that they played much better in the second half, just talking about their performance, so that's why I wanted to bring that up to you. All right, guys, I'm going to have you guys chime in on the full-time stats, and then, David, I'm going to go to you and get your thoughts on the full-time stats, see what we can take away from that. And, Giannis, I'll go to you first. I'm just going to read the full-time stats of this match. Fulham had 62% of the possession at 38% for Cardiff City. Total shots in favor of Fulham, 17-9. On target, 4-3 in favor of Fulham. Corners were even at 4. Crosses, Fulham edged it at 21-20. Tackles were in favor of Cardiff City, 15-10. Attempted passes, 624 to 378 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 243 to 125 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 86% to 80% in favor of Fulham. Accurate passes, 542 to 303 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, 18 to 12 in favor of Fulham. And fouls, 19 for Cardiff City, 5 for Fulham. All right, Giannis, what can we learn from the full-time stats?
Well, we're still drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, we're trying to rely on the possession, the passing, and the movement. And it's good to see that the passing accuracy was good. I think one of the things that actually sticks out to me isn't in the stats is the fact that we came back in this game. I think that shows a team that's got a lot more resilience maybe than last year. I'm not so sure that we'd have come back against Cardiff this time last year, but the fact that we did get the equaliser is important. And, I mean, the two goals that Cardiff City scored yesterday were, I mean, the Gunnarsson, everybody knows about his throwing crumbs. If the European Championships didn't teach anybody anything, I don't know what did. But credit to Cardiff to come back, but then credit to us to come back as well. And the good thing is we've got Middlesbrough in the Cup on Wednesday, the League Cup. And that gives Slovenia a game to tinker about with the lineup, maybe he'll put a similar lineup as he did against the O's. Maybe we'll have a new player in or two. But it's good to see we're still passing and the accuracy is there. But for me, the big thing that stands out is the fact that we were a goal up. Now we were 2-1 down, but we still found the resilience and the fortitude to get a point and maybe even get three at the end.
Okay, I'm glad that you brought up the comeback to be able to fight back, because I think that's important to talk about. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts of the stats, but also what Giannis just shared, talking about being down 2-1 and then being able to fight back to get the equalizer.
Yeah, that to me, I mean, the statistics just basically show that in the second half, Cardiff City, you know, they kind of changed it up a bit at the halftime. They came out with a little bit more vigor and a little bit more tenacity, and that we had to cope with a little bit more of a aggressive Cardiff side that used their physicality a lot more on us. So I think that the statistics basically kind of show more of it, where we dominated in the first half. It was much more of an even affair in the second half. And if you just look at the second half alone, the 2-2 draw may seem fair, and especially with their two goals they scored and the way that they tried new techniques and different dynamics to try and to get into our defense. So overall, the statistics to me are not very shocking. I think it shows a much more even championship encounter, and one that is more likely to be the average type of match that we will be fighting against opposition in the future, rather than being completely dominant statistically. So the second half was kind of a wake-up call insofar as it shows how even teams can be and how much different one half can be from the other, and how it can really change the outcome of a match and really the outcome of your entire season on the whole. So the second half is much more of what I expected the entire encounter to be like, rather than what we saw in the first half. But I think Giannis makes an extremely excellent point, and one that I kind of alluded to earlier, where, you know, when Cardiff went up 2-1, I thought the game was over, but also this team has shown me, as I said earlier, aside to them, that Fulham has not been able to present its supporters for about 4 or 5 seasons now. And that is, we were ahead. We were dominating. Okay, they scored one. Okay, oh no, they scored twice. What do we do? Well, instead of capitulating and just giving up, they decided to fight on and press on. And as David says, being, you know, the witness there seeing it, that had we been given more time, not only did we come back to draw it, but we would have gone on to win it more than likely. And that's definitely what it sounded like over the radio. So I think the ability for Fulham to only take the lead, but then lose it and then come back to draw shows such a resilience within the squad and shows such a different mentality that it's beyond refreshing. It's gotten to the point now where if we get scored on, I know that we have every chance and every ability to get back into the game, something that has been missing so drastically from previous seasons. And it can only spell greatness and excellence for future games so long as we keep this kind of momentum and this team belief up. So it definitely shows a brighter future ahead for our club, most definitely.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the full-time stats, if they back up what you watched. Also, thoughts on what Giannis and Mike been talking about the fight back. You already talked about it. You truly believe that if there was more time, we could have gone on and won this match. So talk to that as well. But first, thoughts on full-time stats, David.
Yeah, well, the stats, as I said before, they kind of do tell you quite a bit about the game. The fact that we had much more of the ball, the fact that we had more shots, but also the fact that they had almost as many shots on target as we did. So
yep,
despite having, you know, much less of the ball and much less shots, they still ended up equal in the game. And that's something that, you know, you need to bear in mind. We've talked about this a lot, how, you know, the dominance of possession counts for nothing sometimes. It's about what you do with the ball, not how much you have of it. They had as many crosses as us and corners, I think. But it's certainly towards the end, Cardiff were hanging on. Once we got that goal back from McDonald, it was all Fulham really there. And as I say, Cardiff put an extra central defender on to try and, you know, thwart Matt Smith and everything. And it was only through a bit of last minute defending and perhaps slightly poor finishing that we didn't actually snatch it overall. So I mean, the stats, you know, as I've said before, sometimes they're very accurate, sometimes they're misleading. I think they were on this occasion pretty accurate. Really, they show everything you need to know. One team had more of the ball, one team had more shots, but the match finished equal, and that's down to Cardiff being much more, you know, threatening, you know, when they did have the ball in dangerous positions than we were. And that's, you know, that testament to the fact that we need maybe that midfielder still to unlock defences more, maybe certainly with Aiti being out injured, and a striker that's going to be very clinical.
Very interesting, David. Excellent analysis today. I'm going to go back to one thing before I go over to your player ratings. And something you said earlier, it involved Kevin McDonald and Scott Parker kind of being the same player, same type of player. And Savisa had mentioned this in interviews that he's looking for a central midfielder. Do you think that is, you know, again, what you watched, do you think that was part of the issue here is that you have two of the same out there against Cardiff City? You know, you don't really have that one Dixon Atuhu type. You have the passer in McDonald, but they are similar types of players, and they don't have really any pace back there, David. So just talk a little bit about that.
Well, they are similar players, but when it comes down to it, despite the fact that McDonald saved the point with the goal, I think Parker still looked like the better player, and that's testament to the fact that obviously he was a full international for England, and he's played at the highest level. Parker probably, you know, he made less mistakes than McDonald, really, but they are similar. Neither of them are sort of super penetrating. If anything, again, it was Parker who a couple of times tried to skip round players, almost got into the box with little runs. Whereas McDonald is much more keen just to, you know, take the ball and go sideways and go forwards and go sideways and go backwards, pick the ball up from the defenders and things. And although he's, you know, he's pretty economical with the ball, he doesn't make too many mistakes. It is a bit much of a muchness there with Parker and McDonald. I know we're kind of playing a sort of a 4-2-3-1 where you know, in that system you have maybe two defensively minded protecting players, but neither of them are top out and out, you know, ball winning midfielders. Not really. They do a bit of everything. They do a bit of ball winning, they do a bit of passing, but there's not, you know, it is very much of a muchness there with those two, and that's going to be something to look at because, you know, we've seen Tunnicliffe a couple of times, and to be honest with you, this season so far, when he's been in the team, we've looked the worst for it, really. So he had two better players out there. It's going to be interesting to see if, you know, if he's going to play both of those. I assume McDonald's meant to be playing because he is, you know, one of the signings. But,
right.
You know, the interesting thing is that, you know, if we're looking for someone, who will play there? Will Parker sit out? Because Parker's been, you know, very fundamental lately. He's played all the time, and he's still looking pretty sharp. But, you know, will it be a changed system? Who knows? But certainly much of a match is there with those two, and I think we need someone slightly different there. We had this before, the Parker and Sidwell situation.
Right.
Again, not as similar as these two were, really. I think these two are much more alike than Parker and Sidwell were. But it never quite worked with those two. You just need the right balance, and I don't think we've quite found it yet.
No, it's a good point, Dave. That's why I definitely wanted your thoughts on that. You know, throughout the whole show, I'm thinking I want to go back and ask you about this because you and I have talked about this in the past. Having different types of players, especially in central midfield, partners being a little bit different, and these two players are similar. So it would be interesting to see if they get a central midfielder. Again, I'm pretty sure, based on what I've listened to from Savisa, he wants one. The question is, what type of central midfielder will he be going after? All right, David, we are coming near the end of the show, so could you possibly rate the players in a timely manner and then share your man of the match, and then we'll also talk about Savisa's ratings too, but we'll get to that at the very end. So just share your ratings for all the players and then end with your man of the match.
I'm going to give Button a 6. He had very little to do. I can't blame him for the goals. Only really had one comfortable save to make. Distribution was a bit poor a couple of times from his kicking. Did come out and punch. Nothing really of note otherwise. Adoy was likewise, really. It was a very quiet game for him, I think. We didn't see as much of the excitement that we expected from him. He caught out of position maybe a couple of times, made up for it usually, but 6 out of 10 again for me for him, an average performance, really. Callas, I think he was a bit with noticeable, quite strong again in defence. Didn't really make any mistakes of note. Wasn't as dominant maybe as before. I'll give him a 6.5. Maddall was probably the best out of the defenders for me. Went about his business as usual, mopped up pretty well, pretty strong. 7 for me. Malone, a quiet game, really. Got forward a few times, but you know, went backwards again. Like to see him take his man on a bit more. Not a fantastic game, but not an awful game. But I think a little bit muddled second half, really. I think Cardiff worked out how to get between him and Sessegnon. 5.5 for me for him. Kearney, very disappointing after recent games, really. Had very, very little to do at all. Very little involvement in the game. Missed the shooting chance near the end. Headed the ball to them for their first goal. Not enough creativity. A couple of times he was on the ball. A bit predictable going on his left foot. Cardiff sussed him out. 5 out of 10 for me. Parker, he's going to be my man of the match, I'm afraid. He was still busy. He tried to hold it all together. Few runs, good tackles, very few mistakes. 7.5 for me for Parker. McDonald, few mistakes, bit pedestrian, but used the ball pretty well most of the time without being too penetrative. Of course, got a vital goal for us. 6.5 for me. IET hard to rate him, really. Just starting to get into the game and was knocked out by the injury, so 6 out of 10 for me for him. Up front, or Aluku, very busy. Definitely always a threat on the ball. Looked useful when he went on the left second half, put a good cross in. Architect, of course, of both goals, really. So going to give him a 7. Corley, very quiet performance, really. Not much in the game. So a bit of movement, but not enough for me. 5 out of 10 for Corley. And for the main substitutions, Sessegnon, I say it was a mixed game for him, really. Came on before he'd done anything, scored a goal. But I think he struggled a little bit to get a stamp on the game, to find a position, a little bit lost for me. I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because I think he can do a lot better than that. But very, very grateful for his goal. Matt Smith, in the short time he was on, looked dangerous. Not really much else to say for that, but 6 out of 10. And okay. LBC wasn't on long enough to give him a rating, really.
Okay. Very good there, David. All right. Quickly, I'm just going to share some Man of the Match shout-outs here from the phone supporters on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. John Wright said, not much to split Parker and McDonald, but going to go for McDonald. The goal shades it between the two. John Mason said, difficult. Luko was always a threat, and his assist for Sessegnon was nothing short of brilliant. Odoi continues to impress, and with Maddow and McDonald, we seem to have found a great central pairing. I think he was talking about Collis. Sessegnon looked non-phased and finished well, and Parker bellied his aging years. But on balance, McDonald was pretty much faultless and gets my vote. Kearney was a bit disappointing, which is a shame, and he is pivotal to our performances this season. So John agrees with you about Kearney there, David. Gary Cooper says, McDonald for me, not alone for the sublime finish, but was rock solid, and more Man of the Match performances to come, definitely in the championship team of the week. James Eads said, Aluko looked promising again with his trickery. Parker showing that age is just a number. I would like to give it to Sessegnon, a shout-out. He continues to come on leaps and bounds, as I'm so glad for him to grab his first senior goal for the club. As for the overall Man of the Match, it will please you, Russ, when I say McDonald. It looks a great acquisition in the middle of the park and controls the tempo well. He is a ball-playing midfielder, and I feel that the goal yesterday afternoon is the first of a handful he will get this season. Rob Murphy ends the Man of the Match shout-outs here. Man of the Match is definitely Savisi Jokanović for standing up and calling it as it is. All us fans are grateful we have someone to speak for us against this madness. Okay, and that was Rob Murphy. Okay. All right, let's end the show just talking quickly about Slavisa. And David, I'm gonna start with you. Rate Slavisa.
Are we gonna go over the hour today, Russ? By interesting or not?
What?
I'm interested to know. Sorry, are we gonna go over the hour today?
Yes, we are, David. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you should drop off now, my friend. We're gonna go
briefly
over.
Not a
problem,
I'll
David.
Call back straight in. Don't worry.
Call straight back in. I'm sorry. Okay. With that said, I'm going to go to you, Mr. Mike O'Connor. Rate Slavisa for this match based on everything we've talked about and what you listened to. Give him a rating.
Slavisa, going to give him a rating of an 8.5 out of 10. Maybe 8.75, closer to 9, if you want to round it up. He made very few, I think, substitutional errors here. He's obviously one of the greatest managers we've had since Roy Hodgson, for sure. I think his decision to bring Sessegnon on was not a coincidence that he scored, because Ryan, as we've seen in previous matches he's played, not only likes to play in defense, but he is often causing problems in the box, running into the box, trying to get on the end of crosses, trying to get his tap-ins, trying to draw defenders to open up midfielders. So I think that decision to replace Ayite with Sessegnon was just not even just a mere PR campaign, but really because he thought Sessegnon would be the man to make that impact in the last few minutes, and he did that. So I think that that was a substitutional act of genius. However, he loses some points for me where, as I mentioned earlier in the show, if you start the second half and you keep Sessegnon in the midfield, I think that might have been an error in judgment, only because not only is Sessegnon a little bit physically smaller and less powerful than the men he's playing against, but you're also asking him to play out of position for a longer period of time, which I think is slightly worrying for me. In my opinion, completely novice, of course, he should have, if you're going to keep Sessegnon on, you move him back to left back, you substitute Malone, and you either move Aluko over to the left-hand side and bring in another player, or you substitute Malone for LVC or someone similar that can play in the midfield and not get caught out as much as Ryan Sessegnon sometimes did. But overall, I think that the timing of the substitutions and the way that Jokanović has really motivated these players and continues to bark from the sideline and is always being animated rather than just sitting in his chair speaks volumes for his character and for his commitment to this team. So overall, he gets an 8.5 out of 10 for me.
Okay, very good. Very interesting. Over to you, Giannis. Thoughts on Savica?
I'll give him a 9. I like the substitutions. I thought they were bold. The Sessegnon one is an interesting one about in terms of changing position. I think, you know, on one side you could say, well, he could have played it safe and knocked him, you know, dropped him back to left back. But on the other side, you could say, well, he's taking a gamble because he's got faith in this kid. And often we criticise managers for not, you know, taking a risk and showing faith in your kids. Because remember, the kids, you know, have less, they don't feel like they've got anything to lose. They've got less of an ego and they just go out and play and don't think about it. So it didn't quite work yesterday, but it was worth the gamble. In terms of the message that Slavica sent, I think it was very pointed. I think it was very clear. And it's you know, I was very annoyed about it last night in terms of, you know, that he was upset. I wasn't annoyed at him. But now thinking about it, I think it's a PR move to apply pressure. I've long thought that Mike Rigg should stick his head down the toilet with the turds. And take his buddies with him as well, because I'm being really blunt. Football people who are not football, you know, who don't know anything about football, shouldn't be running football. It's really that simple. Like, I mean, you know, if you can drive a bus, drive a bus. If you're a neurosurgeon, be a neurosurgeon. But these clowns don't know, and. I think he's just basically trying to apply the pressure, saying, look, we've got a week and a half to go. Let's get some signings in. We need them now. We've got off to a good start. We've got the impetus. Let's not lose momentum. And he's obviously getting frustrated with the speed of it. You know, it sounds like the speed of a Hillman imp crossed with a Reliant Robin. So he wants to get he wants to get stuff done. And hopefully this will apply the appropriate pressure.
Okay, very, very good there, Giannis. Boy, I've missed doing a show with all you guys together. This is great. This has been a great show. David, I'm going to go to you. Definitely want your thoughts on Savica. And I thought Giannis just brought up a very interesting point because it didn't work. You know, based on what you shared, it sounds like it didn't work with Ryan Sessegnon. It was a gamble, but don't we sometimes want managers to take gambles and put their faith in players? That's what he did here. So I'm curious where you fall on this when you rate Savica.
Well, actually, I'm shocked by what Giannis said, actually, there, Russ. I really am.
Okay.
Well, Giannis talked about flushing down the toilet with the turds, but he didn't mention Jazz Richards at the same time.
Oh, but because he's already in the pipe, David. I mean, he's been flushed already. He's after the Vindaloo.
I was just surprised that we got through this whole show with and Jazz Richards played, you know, 60 minutes or so, and yet We haven't mentioned him, but thus was his lack of contribution. That unfortunately, they played him in as a wing back, which meant that we didn't have a chance to exploit him enough. But he did bugger all, really, and I think Cardiff were a lot better when he went off. Actually, to be honest, that's probably part of it. They obviously realised. But in terms of what we're saying about Slavica, I think it's difficult for a rating because I think perhaps he took a gamble in a couple of fronts. He took a gamble to bring Sessegnon on. He took a gamble to start Woodrow instead of Smith.
Yep.
And maybe neither of them really worked as well. I know Sessegnon scored straight away, so you could say it's fantastic. And say that's what I was joking about when I was tweeting yesterday, saying what an inspired substitution it was. But I don't think it really worked for me. I don't think Matt Smith being left out really worked either.
Yep.
And this is where we are because... I say Mike Gregg will be pulling his hair out probably now listening to this, but I think at the moment Matt Smith was our best option to start the game. So for Slavica, I don't think I can rate him highly for perhaps his actual decisions, but you've got to give him credit for the fact that he did make changes and the belief is installed in the team and that we just didn't roll over and die. Last season, we'd have rolled over and died most certainly after Cardiff scored the second goal. I don't think there'd have been any way back into the game. And we finished that game strongly. So whatever he did, he did pretty well. And for the fact that he's standing up also to the weird things that are going on as regards the ownership and the analytics or whatever, I think, I'll knock a couple of marks off because I don't think it was his best performance. I'm going to give him 8 out of 10, though, Slavica.
Wow, that's very good, David. And you are a hard grader, so that's actually pretty good, my friend. All right, let's end the show with just final thoughts about everything we talked about. Like I said, we started the show talking about the situation with Slavica's comments after the match to BBC Radio London. Then, of course, we went through the match. And once again, I'm just going to share with everyone that we will be doing another show about Slavica's comments. I think it deserves its own show, so we're going to be doing that. But let's go to final thoughts. Mr. O'Connor, I'll start with you. Final thoughts on the show.
Final thoughts are that Slavica will survive the entire season as Fulham manager, which is something unprecedented in our recent history. We will be in the top 6 come end of the season based off the performances so far, and we're going to win promotion back to where we belong. That is my final thoughts.
Wow, that's a bold final thought. I like it. Giannis, final thoughts.
I actually agree with everything that Mike has said. I'd also like to see I'd like to see Mike Rigg. I'm organizing a competition, which is the Let's Chase Mike Rigg Around the Car Park, followed by 100 people armed with baseball bats.
Sponsored by Klein Statistical Analysis.
Yeah, he's the guest of honor. I hope he can make it. But jokes aside, no, you know what? Excellent show. I'm so sorry I overslept the clock. I love what Slavica did. I like what he's, and I agree. I have to agree with David on this one. Matt Smith is our best attacking option right now. You keep going back to the well if he's playing as well as he is until we can get a true goal scorer in whoever that's going to be.
Okay, very good. And I can just. I'm not in England, but I'm sure David has a big smile on his face knowing that you agree with him. I think that's great. David, final thoughts.
Well, I'm a bit concerned now. I'm in southwest London myself, only, not far from Fulham, that I think we need to call out Dyna Rod because there's going to be some blockage with all these turds that have been flushed down the toilet lately. but I'm going to end with a question, not a thought. And my question is, we're talking about we need this midfield player.
Yep.
Is that going to be Yozabed? What does Yozabed bring to the party? We didn't
see
him yesterday.
That's a great point, Dave.
Yeah. I would say almost certainly that we'll see him on Wednesday. You imagine he would start him on Wednesday. You would think so in this match. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be heading home from London Wednesday evening back up north. So I actually can't make that match because they've stitched me up putting it on a Wednesday rather than a Tuesday. But never mind. But I hope that someone will be watching that match and we'll see what he's like. Because is he going to be that different player we need in central midfield? Or is he going to be used...
It's a great point, David.
Is he going to be used as a stopgap while Aiti is injured? Are they going to sort of rearrange and maybe play him off the striker where Aluka's been and move Aluka to the left. But Josebed, I want to see what he offers, because before we start saying let's buy more players, we've got a new player that we haven't seen yet.
That's a great way to end the show, David, because I've been thinking the same thing. When I was looking at his history, he's played an attacking midfield role. He's played last year, he played right behind the striker, but he also has played a central midfield role. He's also played a defensive midfield role. So he's played in all levels centrally. So that's an interesting question. Guys, I'll go to you. Giannis, before we end the show, thoughts on what David just shared, because Savica keeps talking about the fact that he wants a central midfielder, but could it possibly end up being Josebed?
It could. I don't think he's had too much time is I don't think he's match fit. He got a little bit of time in the week, but I think it's gonna take a little bit of time to bed him into the lineup to get him up to match fitness. He could be. I do think he's probably got his eye on another player out there, and it might be a loan as well from the Premier League. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's going to happen. That makes sense. It's just that I think there's going to be a delay before we really start to see him trying to make an impact, if only because I don't think he's quite match fit yet.
That's a very good point. He just might not be up to fitness yet. Mike, your thoughts on this, and then we'll end the show.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it earlier in the show. I just failed to bring it up. I really do think we will see him come Wednesday. I think you actually might see him paired with Tunnicliffe, or you might see him paired with a McDonald or a Parker, because they will, since they're like the yin and the yang of each other, they'll complement each other nicely, hopefully. And I think the only reason why Josebed has not been featured is due to his fitness level in comparison to his peers. And I think that we were mentioning earlier about how Parker and McDonald are so similar. I feel like Josebed, if he comes good based off of what we've been told and where he's played, I think he'll be more likely come mid-season to see more of a McDonald Josebed pairing, using Tunnicliffe or an LVC or a Parker as a substitutional role for either of those players when necessary. If you need to do a bigger defensive fight, you'll put a McDonald and a Parker pairing in the center. If you want to have more of an attacking option, maybe LVC and Josebed. Or if you want to have a bit of both to offset, you'll do a pairing of either the defensive-minded versus the more attacking. But I feel like Josebed, when he does become match fit, will hopefully be able to provide us that key extra additional player in depth that we're lacking. And I think right now midfield should not be where we're focusing. We should be focusing on getting that striker in, and then if we have time, come back to potentially getting another midfielder. Because Josebed is he could be a gem, and we just don't know it yet. So we'll see what happens.
That's a great point. Very good point. I think striker is definitely what they need to be looking at first, and I'm not against them looking at center back, another winger, central midfielder, but striker should be the priority. And before we go, I just want to just end with this and just say, look at the brain on David, a little Pulp Fiction message there, because David brought that up at the very end. David, have you seen Pulp Fiction? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, actually, I haven't.
Okay, well, then
you don't know.
Well, there's a Goldman for me, because you don't have a clue what I'm talking about. Giannis, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. It is time to end the show. Guys, all of you, excellent, excellent show. You guys were all fantastic. And I just want to thank you all for doing this with me. David, thank you for the last minute for coming on to give us your view from the match. And as always, Mike O'Connor and Giannis, Shanaeus really brought it with their commentary. Great show. But it is time to wrap it up. For Mike, Giannis, and David, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Have a great day.
Bye. Bye.
Cheers. See you, Mike. See you, Giannis. Bye, everyone.